Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI calls attention to World Blood Donor Day. Franciscan Father Joe Rozanski expresses his fears and his hopes before travelling to Rio de Janeiro to participate in the Rio Plus 20 People's Summit. And Brazilian Father Thomas Rosica, attending the 50th International Eucharistic Congress in Dublin, expresses his thoughts on how the event can be the opportunity for the Church to deliver a lasting message of hope. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday called attention to World Blood Donor Day, celebrated on this coming Thursday, June the 14th, under the sponsorship of the World Health Organization. Speaking to the pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square, the Pope thanked everyone who gives blood, saying it's an important form of solidarity. And as Chris Altieri says in his report, Benedict also recalled the Feast of Corpus Christi.
Cari fratelli, sorelle,
Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday called attention to World Blood Donor Day, celebrated on this coming Thursday, June the 14th, under the sponsorship of the World Health Organization. The Holy Father thanked everyone who gives blood, expressing his great appreciation for that form of solidarity which he said is indispensable to so many sick people.
Esprimo il mio vivo apprezzamento.
The Pope's remarks came after the Angelus prayer with the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square. Speaking ahead of the traditional prayer of Marian devotion, the Holy Father recalled the great Eucharistic feast day marked in so many places around the world on Sunday, the solemnity of the most precious body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Feast of Corpus Domini, or Corpus Christi.
La festa del Corpus Domini è un grande atto di culto pubblico.
The Pope spoke of the importance of the Corpus Christi feast as a great public act of Eucharistic worship, evidenced especially in the many Eucharistic processions held in parishes and dioceses around the world. He also noted the emphasis the feast places on Eucharistic adoration as a central and integral part of the life of individual Christians, of faith communities, and of the whole Church.
La preghiera di adorazione si può compiere sia...
The Pope returned to discuss the importance of Corpus Christi in his words to the English-speaking pilgrims gathered in the square.
Today's solemnity of the body and blood of Christ celebrates the Lord's saving presence in the most holy Eucharist. At the Last Supper, on the night before his death on the cross, Jesus instituted the Eucharist as the sacrament of the new and eternal covenant between God and man. May the sacrifice of forgiveness and reconciliation strengthen the Church in faith, unity, and holiness. Upon all of you invoke all the Lord's blessings of joy and peace.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. World leaders and powerful industry managers from the private sector are preparing to travel to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil to attend the upcoming Rio Plus 20 United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development. There will also be representatives from NGOs and other groups, all aiming to come together to shape how we can reduce poverty, advance social equity, and ensure environmental protection on a planet damaged by pollution and rocked by climate change. The United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development takes place from the 20th to the 22nd of June to mark the 20th anniversary of the 1992 UN Conference on Environment and Development in Rio, as well as the 10th anniversary of the 2002 World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg. This conference will focus on two themes: a green economy in the context of sustainable development, poverty eradication, and the institutional framework for sustainable development. It will result in a focused political document. But the movers and the shakers of the world will not be the only ones in Rio working hard to put forward their opinions. Thousands of members of civil society and faith groups are participating in the Rio Plus 20 People's Summit for Social and Environmental Justice, an event that runs alongside and overlaps the UN conference from the 13th to the 23rd of June. Amongst the participants at Rio Plus 20 is Joe Rozanski, OFM, He's the Franciscan father who heads the Franciscan Office of Justice and Peace and the Integrity of Creation at Franciscan headquarters here in Rome. He agreed to talk to me just before setting off to Rio, where he was immediately due to hold meetings with some 60 fellow Franciscans attending the event to exchange ideas, set down propositions, and strategize on getting their voice heard in the highest echelons of the organization. I had read one of a series of articles Father Joe published in the run-up to Rio Plus 20 and commented on his intro, in which he says, "In the opinion of many, we stand at a critical moment of Earth's history."
I think that Rio Plus 20, obviously, it's named after the Rio 92 was the original environmental summit that they held in Brazil. And 20 years later, the UN is coming together to evaluate what's been going on for the last 20 years and to talk about new approaches, maybe, new structures to address the issues that we're facing. As in Rio 92, there's going to be a very strong presence of civil society, because in some way, civil society has been included in the preparations for Rio Plus 20, but in other ways, it has not been. And I think people are becoming increasingly frustrated with the kinds of approach that governments, the United Nations, especially transnational companies, are taking to these issues. So together with the UN conference, there is also the People's Summit. And the UN itself has various mini-meetings. The last one, which is supposed to be for the heads of state or, you know, the heads of delegation, is going to be the 20th to the 22nd of June.
So that's when the movers and shakers of the world will gather, I commented.
Well, economic or environmental, I think it depends on how governments view what's going on at Rio Plus 20. To be quite honest with you, I haven't followed so closely the internal workings of the UN. We Franciscans have an NGO, a Franciscan family NGO at the UN called Franciscans International, and they have much more been accompanying the process leading up to the UN conference in Rio. We are going, we've got about 60 people in a delegation that are going to Rio Plus 20, people from around the world. We've tried to include the different parts of our Franciscan family and different geographical regional representations as well. Our big idea is that, of course, we want to accompany what's going to be going on in Rio, but our biggest concern is that out of these meetings, out of our Franciscan presence in Rio, we're going to be able to articulate some sort of strategic plan for how we want to deal with the issues that will be coming out of Rio. For us, when we talk about environment, we don't talk about environment by itself, but we talk about environmental justice. And the idea is that this would include both the questions of the environment, which are very near and dear to us, especially as Franciscans. But I would hope that just as people, you know, when we're talking about our home, we would like to keep it clean and functioning well. We've got a lot of problems in that area. You know, so we as Franciscans are very concerned about that. But at the same time, we will not be accused of being tree huggers. You know, and the tree hugger label, I'm sure, is meant to disparage the movement in itself. But our question is not just for the trees or not just for the environment, but also for the people who live within the environment.
It seems to me that 20 years on, governments and leaders are turning more and more to faith groups for help in this respect.
It's hard to say. I really don't know. And I don't know what it means to say they turn to us for help. You know, if they're looking for some sort of fervorino, you know, to tell people that this is important, you know, I think we knew that before they did, or at least we've been more concerned about it since then. So I'm not exactly sure what it means. I think part of the question that I would like answered when I go to Rio is to understand exactly what they would like of us. But I think that it's not a one-way street. It's not that we're going to help them. I think they need to listen to our concerns, and we need to take all of these concerns into account when we talk about all of the problems that we're facing. As I was saying earlier, if we're going to be talking about environmental justice, when we talk about environment, we need to take into account the issue of poverty. We need to take into account the issue of unemployment, of climate change, of climate refugees. Usually, if you look around the world, the people who have least created the problems are the ones who are most suffering. And that goes for any place. It's in the developed world, it's in the developing world too. The developing world obviously is much worse off, you know, because the platform is lower. But even there, the whole question of, you know, when we talk about sustainability, that's a big word for, you know, it's been a big word in our circles for a while. It's been a big word in the world, but the way that we define it is very important.
How do you define sustainability?
I think that sustainability can't be defined in simply economic terms or in development terms. People talk about sustainable development, and then, you know, in a sense, the issue is already decided about whether or not you want development, without even talking about sort of what sort of development we're talking about. And I think in that sense, you know, as I look at sustainability, some of the things that we need to look at are lifestyle issues. You know, are the question of less consumption in our world. It is literally impossible for everybody to live like those in the developed world. There are not enough resources in the world. And the idea is not to tell people in the developing world that, well, eat less or, you know, do less or whatever. I think right now we need to come face to face with the reality that if we do not change in the developed world, I don't think we're going to really address the issues that we're talking about here, whether it be of sustainability or, you know, environmental justice. You know, so sustainability, I think we need to look at, you know, sustaining the lives of people, and we need to look at sustaining the life of our world around us. You know, because if we don't take care of nature, if we don't take care of the environment, it will not take care of us. I mean, more and more, you know, we look around and see all of these greater extremes of weather, you know, weather patterns, et cetera, stronger storms, more rain, more drought, et cetera, that's really what the climate change science says is going to happen. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the winter's colder this year. Well, it's a greater extreme, and this is an effect of climate change. So it's hard to define sustainability just on the spur of the moment, but it seems to me that's another part of what we need to do. We need to call one another to a dialogue. If we don't sit down and talk to one another honestly about all these things, I don't think we're going to get anything done. It seems to me that much of the economic world is absolutely much more concerned about the bottom line and about profit. And they are not very concerned about the issues of sustainability and the poor, those who are losing out in this whole process. So I think together we need to raise these questions and need to look for answers.
Are you confident your voice will be heard?
No, I'm not. I'm not sure what's going to happen here. There's a whole debate going around green economy right now, because green economy is a big catchphrase for what's going to be going on in Rio. And there are surely two very diverse approaches to green economy. You know, there are those who are saying that green economy is going to be what saves us. And there are others that are saying that what green economy is doing, it's commodifying all of nature. It's turning everything, the processes of nature, all of the resources that nature offers, it's turning all of these things into commodities, and it's going to give them a price. You know, for us, you know, if you look at the Franciscan, at St. Francis and the Canticle of the Creatures, for example, Francis approaches nature in terms of relationship. It's not just the sun or the moon, it's brother sun, it's sister moon, it's brother wind, and right down the whole list of everything that exists, Francis is concerned to be in relationship with people and with the world around him. And then he sees that, you know, based on these relationships, then you begin to talk about, well, how do you organize yourself? What should we do? Francis lived at a time of great change, as we are now, in terms of economics, in terms of political systems. I think that, like Francis, we need to raise the questions that, for us, are the bottom line. Whether or not people are going to hear us, well, I'm not sure about the process that we need to employ for people to be able to hear us. Again, going back to what I said at the beginning, this is why it's so important for us to have some sort of strategic plan right now. I mean, if we have a whole world of pastoral institutions that we work in, schools, hospitals, parishes, you know, what do we do in those places? First of all, to raise the consciousness of our own people, and then to have them work to raise the consciousness of the other people around them.
You know? Well, one thing we can say since 1992 is awareness generally has risen incredibly in the general population, wouldn't you say?
I do think that more people know about the problems right now, but there are also still many people who are confused or who have an idea that's pretty different from, you know, what I would feel. And I think it has a lot to do with conflicting publicity or conflicting ideas that are present in the world today. I do think that, you know, the whole idea of green economy, you know, we talk about the whole idea of whitewashing something in English. There are many who are saying they're trying to greenwash right now all the problems that we face. And, you know, when you look around and see the publicity that is, you know, that people are just bombarded with every day, whether it be about products or whether it be about systems, you know, the way that we do things, it's difficult to really stop and to think about what's at stake. People's lives, it seems to me, are just very hectic today. And, you know, we talk about having more communication than ever, but I'm concerned that I think we have less now. You know, I look at the end of the day how many emails I send. You know, how much do I really think about what I'm sending out? And it just seems to me that that's what people's lives are like. They're on a treadmill. Things go quickly. They don't have time to think about things. And that has that's about everything, about your families, about your work, about the approach to life. People don't have the possibility or have very little possibility to address those things in very good ways or in ways that in productive ways. Maybe it's better than I think people all try to do their best, but I don't know if the resources are there to do it right now. And that's why I say that I think, you know, one of our jobs is to really work on the whole issue of dialogue. How do we get people talking to one another again about the important things in our lives? If we're going to talk about, for example, a lifestyle that's more austere or more sober, I mean, we could do so many wonderful things with our lives. We don't need to be buying the most up-to-date computer, but all of that, too, is part of the system that we buy into. You know, all you do, you open a newspaper, turn on the TV, or go to your computer, and there's all sorts of advertising about the most up-to-date things.
Children are very vulnerable to this kind of message.
Of course they are, and the people who do the publicity know that very much. Why do you put candy at the cashier's area in the supermarket?
What do you hope will come out of this summit?
Well, I think maybe my own hopes have a lot more to do with our particular work than with the summit. I mean, I would love to see something really worthwhile, concrete, come out of this meeting. But looking to see what's going in, you know, they say garbage in, garbage out. You know, and I just get the impression that the kind of discussion that's gone on up until now is going to make it very difficult for good results to come out of these meetings, you know, in terms of governments coming to agreements with one another. Because developing countries, they're not going to sign on to a plan that basically is going to maintain the status quo. They want something to change. They want the governments that, or the countries that have created the problems, to take responsibility for them. And I just don't know if that's going to happen. because we've had a lot of time up until now to begin to address these issues, and it has not happened. If anything, there's been obfuscation. You know, when you look at the meetings that have led up to, like in Copenhagen and Durban, et cetera, the real important issues are not discussed. The important solutions that we need to begin to look at, I don't think are being talked about. So for me, I'll pray for good outcomes at that level. I'll pray for the UN as well, because I think the UN is little by little really losing its good influence, in the sense of being a place where governments can come together and actually hammer out good, concrete, just decisions about how to do things in the world. It just seems to me we're becoming more and more, you know, it's the survival of the fittest. You know, whoever's the strongest, whoever screams the loudest. So I don't know where that's going to go. But my hope mostly resides with the groups that, like our own, I hope, will make decisions about what we need to do, and then to look for ways to make that happen. There's a guy up in Albany, New York. He has been, up until now, a professor at Siena College, although he'll be leaving the college right now. But he's also a secular Franciscan. He and his wife, they're part of a fraternity, a secular fraternity, that's composed of a number of college students. And really, they've organized themselves around the whole issue of ecology and how we need to address what's going on in our world. And I think that's going to be the way that we need to look at these issues, from the bottom up rather than from the top down. I know that he talked to me a lot about, like in the U.S., the pipeline that they want to build from Canada down to Texas. He's talking about, even if the president signs that in, there's been a lot of work at the grassroots level for communities between Canada and Texas, that they will not allow the pipeline to come through their area. You know, so it seems to me we can find ways to address the issues.
So the man on the street can feel as though his voice is even minimally listened to. It's there. We're there too.
Yeah, I hope so. But I think that we need to find ways to make that happen. You know, there's some wonderful programs about empowering people, empowering communities, empowering groups. And I think that's what we need to look at. You know, based on what we believe. You know, you said earlier, you asked about the invitation that we're receiving from maybe the governments or whoever, from the UN, to offer our part in this, you know. And I think what we can offer is a spirituality, a mysticism, you know, a way to approach this that gives us reason to work together to make the world a better place for everybody and not just for some. So that would be my hope, that at least, you know, at the level of our Franciscan family, we'll be able to decide together about how to address these issues and what, you know, and concrete steps that we can take to make them happen. My idea is, I'm going to say to people, we do not want a document at the end of this. What we want maybe is a list of proposals that we're going to work at, and we'll see where it goes.
That was Franciscan Father Joe Rozanski, Director of the Office of Justice and Peace and the Integrity of Creation at the Franciscan Headquarters in Rome. The 50th World Eucharistic Congress is underway in Dublin, Ireland this week, after an opening Mass on Sunday in the Royal Dublin Society Arena. Eimear McCarthy is in Dublin, where she speaks with Brazilian Father Thomas Rusica, the president of Canada's Catholic Salt and Light television network. Father Rusica says the week-long Congress presents a great opportunity for the Church to deliver a lasting message of hope.
You know, the difference between the Church making its voice heard and public institutions or agencies or other things in the world making their voice heard, in the world, it depends on how loud you are, how boisterous you can be, how critical or how devastating you can be towards other people. Whereas in the Church, the goal of getting our voice heard is through consistency of the message, perseverance, and also offering a message of hope. Much of the messaging we hear from political institutions really presents a false hope. You know, do this today and you'll be successful tomorrow. Whereas the Church is offering another type of hope. So consistency, perseverance, and also content. You know, we're not into sound bites. You cannot sound bite the church. As important as Twitter might be in 140 letters, the church's message and beauty cannot be reduced to simple sound bites or quick fixes or a big splash. So the media may certainly be critical about the Eucharistic Congress, as the media is critical about World Youth Days and any ecclesial event. But let's be careful when we say media, because there are some people working in the media who have brains and intelligence and recognize the deeper things that are happening, while others focus in on the big splash, the numbers, the effect, and they almost have to take a counterpoint to everything that's happening. It's important to remember that those counterpoints only last for 2 or 3 days, and the beauty endures and rises to the top. So I'm sure that, you know, during this week, you'll have some positive stories in Ireland or coming out of Ireland. You'll have all kinds of negative things and people unearthing all kinds of nonsense. That'll pass, and the deep things will last, because the people that are coming here will be changed, and they become multipliers of taking this beauty back to their local churches.
Archbishop Martin said this Congress is not a popularity contest. It's not about the numbers. It's about how people participate. They're gathering to pray. Over 1,000 have come from Canada, North America, but there are also smaller groups of pilgrims from all over the world. I think it was Cardinal Ouellette who hosted the last Congress, who described the Congress in Quebec as a turning point for the church in Quebec. Was it really that way?
I worked with Cardinal Ouellette for 5 years, in preparing for the Eucharistic Congress in 2008. It followed, as you know, the World Youth Day in 2002, which we're celebrating its 10th anniversary. The World Youth Day in Canada was a turning point as well. The backdrop of the World Youth Day for Canada was, of course, the massive sex abuse in North America, all kinds of political crises, September the 11th, and that becomes the stage against which an ecclesial event unfolds and explodes onto the scene. The Eucharistic Congress in Quebec was more than a turning point. Cardinal Ouellette then and now continues to say it was a resurrection of sorts, that a church that was believed to be dormant, a church that was not producing fruit, suddenly came alive. I will never forget the Eucharistic Congress in Quebec, because it was almost a public proclamation that we are here, we are alive, and there is still life here pulsating under the surface. The Eucharistic Congress will do the same here. The huge challenges in Ireland, economic and political challenges, the sex abuse crisis that Ireland has gone through, the lack of credibility and trust in its church leaders. This event takes place to let the world and the church know in Ireland that we're here, we're alive, and there is tremendous hope under the surface.
You're going to be giving a keynote speech. You were invited to give one of the keynote speeches, one of the interventions during the week of catechesis and workshops, and you're going to be giving it on Thursday, I believe, looking at the joy of priesthood. That's a challenge when we see a decline in vocation. So what will you be talking about, and how will you communicate this message to the people who will come to listen to you?
When they invited me to do this a year ago, I remember smiling and saying, shouldn't it be the crisis of the priesthood or the lack of vocations or the mess in your country? I'm very glad they asked me to speak about the joy, because I'm not talking about superficial joy, but I'm going to go to the heart of the priesthood, the gift of the priesthood to the church, and look at those central pillars, if you will, the elements of the priesthood, which are cause for deep joy. I'm going to speak particularly about the priest as modeling his life on Jesus who washes feet. Jesus who does not put himself in a pedestal or demand some kind of false honors, but Jesus who gets up from the table and washes the feet of his friends. I'm going to speak about the deep joy of the priesthood, unlike the superficial joy and laughter and giddiness of the world, but the joy that really makes the world go around. I'm going to talk about the priest as a friend of the saints and a model of holiness. The priest is an agent of the new evangelization.
That was Father Thomas Rosica, the president of Canada's Salt and Light television network, speaking to Vatican Radio's Eva McCarthy. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program, Laudetur Jesus Christus.